that we're going to look at today. And the title of this message is The Chair Game. And you're just going, the chair game, what is that? Well, we're going to look at the chair game out of the scripture today. And we're going to talk about the chair game. So you've been invited to dinner. What happens when you get invited to dinner? Well, you know, when I get invited to dinner and Carol and I, and we go over somebody's house, the first thing we go and we're greeted at the door, and then we come in, and then basically the host will say, well, why don't you have a seat here or there? And when it comes time to dinner, you walk into the dining room, and there's this table with all these seats, and you don't want to sit in the wrong place, so you kind of wait for the host to tell you where to sit. In the day of Jesus, he gets invited to this dinner, and we're going to be looking at that. And a lesson that he gave at this dinner. Now, the section we're going to look at, we have visited three times already. It's a time where Jesus, we know where it takes place, we know when it takes place, and we know some of the players that are there. Simon the Pharisee has invited Jesus and his disciples to come to dinner at his house. We know it's at Simon's house. We know that Jesus, Simon the Pharisee, is there. We know his disciples are there. We know it's on the Sabbath. And in this story that takes place, there's actually four little vignettes of teaching that Jesus does. First thing he does is he heals this guy with dropsy. And he teaches that if you, being a good Jew, had an ox that got stuck in a ditch, would you just leave him there till Sunday, or would you go on the Sabbath and you'd free him? You'd go and free him that day. It's a story that we used in the middle of hospitality, of how when he came, his feet had not been washed. They had not showed Jesus hospitality, whatever. And then we had the story of the woman who comes and washes his feet with her hair. But there's this other little vignette, the thing that takes place that we've not looked at that we're going to look at today. And Jesus has been inviting to dinner. Now, when you were invited for dinner in Jewish custom, in Jewish days, you were set in a particular order. Matter of fact, there was a pecking order or an arrangement of how you would be seated around the table. I have a line of chairs over here. And it would be like the seat of the host. This would be my seat. I'm hosting dinner. So I'm sitting here, and what would happen is the host would then designate where all the seats would go, from the most of authority on down to the lesser. In other words, the host would have a designated seat. The next seat would be for the most distinguished guest. The next one would be the lesser and lesser and on down to this pecking order. So this is what's taking place as we read this in a minute. So when you came to dinner in a Jewish setting, just learning where to sit could be a very, very complicated issue. Just where to sit. So where would you know how to sit? Now this is in Jewish custom. The host would sit in the host chair, but the distinguished guest, age played an importance. The older you were, the more up the line you were. So you came to the dinner and you were 73 years old. Your son was 52. His son was 18. And of course, 72, you're going to sit here and on down the order. But there's some other things that come in. If a person was very strong spiritually in the community and known, and he was there, of course, the spiritual person, the one more in tune with God, he would sit up higher. But then finances also played a role. Because see, if you were rich, then the Jewish culture thought that, oh, he's rich, God is blessing him, he must be close to God, so therefore he's higher esteemed than anyone else. Or there may be a visiting rabbi that would come, that would be very distinguished, out of town, coming, and you would want to honor him. That's what's taking place when Jesus invited him. He's a traveling rabbi. He's now been invited. But we've learned from the past that in this setting, Simon was basically saying, listen, I'll invite you because you're a rabbi, but I don't trust in you, and I don't believe in you. and I am not a follower of you. I'm doing what I have to do because of the custom of hospitality in this nation. So the story opens with Jesus being invited to this dinner, and he's watching what goes on at the table. So let's take a look at and let's read what's taking place, and then I'm going to ask for a couple of volunteers. I think that was 1064 in the red book. Am I right? Okay. But in the Bible, it's Luke, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. This is one of the Gospels in the New Testament. Luke, we have it here, and we're going to look at verse 7. It says, and when he noticed, this is Jesus, when he noticed how the guests picked the places, notice it's the guests that are picking the places. When he noticed how the guests are picking the places to honor at the table, he told him this parable. He's watching them scramble around. He's watching them play musical chairs. He's watching them go for this seat. He tells them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may be invited. And if so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this man your seat. Then humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place. So when the host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you'll be honored in the presence of all your fellow guests. For everyone who exalts himself will be humble, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. What is it going on here? I need a couple of volunteers. I need at least four guys. Now, Brian's already asked me, but Brian, come over here. I just want you to stand here because you're going to be the honored guest and nobody knows you've been invited yet, okay? I need Mike, you want to? Okay, there's a bunch of seats. Go ahead and sit down. I need three more guys. Sit down real quick. Okay, there. Don't sit in mine. I'm the honored guest. Don't sit in the last one. Come on down here. Who's this? Okay, that's Jonathan's seat. Okay, all right. That's enough. That's enough, guys. We don't have enough seats to go around. Okay. Good try. What Jesus is doing, he's watching these guys jockey around, and what he's saying is here, I need one more chair because we got too many chairs. All right? What he's saying is this. When you come in, don't take the seat of honor because someone else may be invited that's more important than you. And if he comes in, you're going to be moved to the lowest seat. Not everybody moved down, but to the lowest seat. So Jonathan runs up here and he gets in the what? Seat of honor. And the host comes to him. Here's your speaking piece in a minute. And the host comes to him and he says, buddy, you're going to have to get up because someone more important is here. And you've just jumped up here and got the seat of honor. So you go sit down over here. Not move down. You have to sit in the seat at least important because this very important man is coming to the dinner. And he is going to come in and he is going to say, you sit here. He is the most important. And Jonathan has a speaking part, and his speaking part is this.
This is so embarrassing.
And that's exactly what takes place. So Jesus is saying this. You know what? Don't just go sit yourself and steal the honor that you think you deserve. But take a lower position like this. Dude, I want to move you to the top because you are so honored because God is working mightily in your life. And he who humbled himself in the last seat, the host exalted and God exalts. You get it? So you know what's going on here. Okay, let's try it again. Do you get it or do I need to do it again? We get it. All right. Give him a hand. Thanks, guys. So that's what's going on. This whole musical chair thing is going on. Jesus is watching it. And as he's doing it, he's looking at him. He teaches this parable. So this little parable we want to talk about, and we're going to call it the chair game, because you're going to realize in a few minutes the chair game goes on in every area of our life. So today becomes a day that we're going to talk about practical application of a simple parable. Jesus tells his story at a meal. He tells it after everybody is jumping around, looking at their place. And the moral of this story is basically this. Jesus says, don't play the chair game. If you get to sit in the seat of honor, it's because the host has put you there. Someone else has put you there. Jesus says, if you get put in a higher chair, let it be because someone else honored you. And you're not the master of self-promotion. Ooh. Because Jesus knew that each of us would be wanting to run this public relation firm that dealt with just one client. You know who that client is? Us. Because we are legends in our own mind. We think we got it together, that the world revolves around us. So our morning question becomes this. What if it's not your job to get the honor, to seek the honor, to grab the honor that you feel that you deserve? What if it's not your job to do that? What if it's not your job to seek after that honor that you feel? I feel I should get this honor, so I'm going to go get this honor. Ever been in a store? I know I have. You go in a store and you're looking for like pickle relish. And you see this guy walking down the aisle. Now, he has the right color pants, the right color shirt. And you go up to him. He said, can you help me, Brian? Can you help me find the pickle relish? And that's what he says. I think it's on aisle 9, but I don't work here. And, you know, that's kind of like what Jesus is talking about. What if it's not your job? What if it's not your job? And that's what he's saying here. What if it's not your job to try to get that honor that you're looking for? It's a chair game. Everybody follow me? You know what I'm talking about, that, don't you? We see this game taking place in the Jewish culture at the time of Jesus, but understand it happens every day. At home, in church, God forbid. It happens in the workplace, on the athletic field. It happens everywhere. You're at a party. You're introduced to this guy. And you start talking, and you know this guy for only about 40 seconds. And then all of a sudden, you know, you ask him, what does he do? And he tells you, well, I'm the president of this, and I used to be the vice president of that. And all of a sudden, you know, before you know it, you're just going, what is this, a job interview? I just came to meet you. Happened to Carol and I. Carol and I, when we were in California a couple of weeks back, and we go to Disneyland, and we're there with Barbara, and Barbara brings this guy with us, you know, to meet him. And, you know, within 2 to 3 minutes of this trip, and we're at Disneyland, I'm hearing how he has his own stock company, how he buys stock, how he does this computer deal. And I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, what is this, a job interview? I just want to ride rides. And what he's doing is he wants me to know he's in a lot higher chair than all these other guys, and he wants me to know it. And I'm going to tell you what, it turned me off pretty quick. I'm there to go to Magic Mountain and ride the ride. The roller coasters, that's what I'm there for. I'm not there for a job interview. And I'm going, whoa. So he wants me to know that he's a first chair kind of person. Anyone met someone like that? Anyone like that? Of course not. Of course not. Couple guys going, oh, no. But warning, warning, warning. You know, alien approaching. Warning, warning, warning. This is much easier to identify in other people than it is what? In ourselves. Oh, we can see it in other people, but we really see it in ourselves. It's really easy to pick up in other people. We don't have a problem seeing that at all. But it takes very significant insight to see it in our own selves. Stay-at-home mom, she's at the same party. They come to her and they ask her, in just a minute, They ask her, what do you do? And the first thing she says, she says, well, I'm a stay-at-home mom, but there's instantly this thing inside of me that says that before we had kids, I went to college at this place and I did this, and then I got my master's degree, and there's this fear that she has to claw her way up, that she's afraid they're going to set her in the last chair, and she wants to let them know, no, I'm a higher chair person, and instantly she starts flying and clawing for that. You know what I mean? I know. But what if it's not her job? What if it's not your job to get the honor that you feel that you deserve? I wish I could tell you that I don't know anything about this as being a pastor, but I'm going to tell you what, I know a lot. The reason why is I've been in reasonable, expressive, interactional discussions with people. And before you know it, in a few seconds, they're going to go, well, Don, what do you do? And here it comes. They're about to put me in a chair. And it's not a chair of honor. It's way down the list. I'm a pastor. Oh, a pastor. Oh, and they just put me right down there. And there's this, and it's worse with other pastors. It is worse because the first thing they say, well, how big is your church? I'm telling you, it's bad. And what happens is they want to put me in a chair way down here, and there's this gravitational pull in me that wants to go, but I got a cool church. I got a cool church, and I had the best people that there are, and we're a loving church. I don't know about you, and I've fallen into the chair game big time. The last time I'm over at a deal where I get invited because they have this school, I'm over there and Judy taught there, so I'm over there and they invite all the pastors, and then they have this brunch for all the pastors, and we're in there and they give us a big book, and you're sitting there and you're hearing this tit for tat with everybody else, how big their church is, what they're doing there, and I'm just sitting there going like, dude, I'm just out of here. And I got up and left. Because this chair game that goes on, so incredible. And if you don't have a church of 500 people, you're not a real church. You're not validated in the church community. And I'm going to tell you, in this town, being the size church we are, there are pastors in this town who will not talk to me because you're a little small podunk church. It's the chair game. But I have the best people. And our church is cool. And God is here, right? But here, what if it's not my job to make sure that I get the honor that I deserve? Once again, major warning. It's much easier to see this go on in somebody else's life, somebody else's church, than it is in mine. It's not just conversational engagements that this thing takes place. It happens when we buy a home. We want to keep up with the who?
Joneses.
So we go buy a bigger house than what we can afford. But it looks nice on the outside, but we can't afford to put any furniture on the inside. So they say, hey, we're going to come visit. No. Well, we'll just meet you in the driveway. No. It happens when we buy cars. I want that better car. I'll pay the extra and go extra in debt so that I look good. And guys, just let you know, don't go buy an expensive car. Studies have already shown you can't pick up girls with a good-looking car. It just doesn't happen. The clothes we buy, are we willing to pay the bucks? Levi's, $14.95. You know, designer jeans, $100 already comes with pre-holes in them, okay? And we're going to pay for the holes. Instead of getting a good pair of Levi's and wearing them out like we did in the old days, you go buy pants right now with holes in them, pay $100 for them because you want to let people see your knees. Cool. But we're willing to do that because, see, we want to be first chair people. What about the toys we buy? See, I went through that looking at buying a motorcycle couple months. Remember we talked about that when it boiled down? Do I really need it? Can I live without it? Yeah. So you know what? I didn't buy it. Because it was just a toy. It was just one of those things. And when I came to the point, do I really need it? No, it'd be nice. I want one. Used to have one, rode for years. But do I really need one? Can I afford it? And the answer was no. So we got to begin to look at that. We want people to know that we're first chair people. And if we're not, we want to appear like first chair people. So what I'm trying to say is this. Don't play the chair game, because it still happens today. There is this distinction, though, and we've got to understand where self-promotion is right. And this first one I'm going to bring up, I'll give you the history of it. Because when I first came here, we shut the Four Square Church down in Claremore, and I was put in charge of finding the realtor and selling that building. So self-promotion, when you buy or sell a new house, you want a good realtor. Well, see, the pastor that was there, he had found this woman that was there that was a great realtor, and she was a Christian. And I said, I don't care if we have a Christian realtor or the biggest sinner in the world. I don't care if it's a guy or a gal. Well, you know, there's this guy that he's real good, or this lady, she's real good, but she smokes. I don't care. I want a tiger lady that knows how to sell houses and sell that house. I want to know that I'm going to a good realtor that can do what I want her to do and get me a sale and get it real quick. I don't care if this is a real nice angel of a person that doesn't smoke, but doesn't produce. Do you understand what I mean when it comes to that? I want a tiger lady. Same thing. I don't want a goofball mechanic working on my car. I want someone to tell me, I'm a good mechanic. I've been in doing this for years, and I am good at it. Same way with a wedding photographer. Bill Rube, who used to come here, he's a wedding photographer now. And you know what he does when he goes and visited with young clients and they're wanting to know, are you very good? He takes this big portfolio and he lays it out and says, I shoot these weddings and this after this. This guy, he had several bridal stores and he does wedding photography. He's shutting down the bridal stores because he can't keep up with wedding photography because he has such a good reputation now. What about a good doctor? My dad walks into his doctor at one time, Dr. Sabrasula, and he walks up there and he sees his diploma on the wall. And he asks him, he says, do you have your grades like you can see on the diploma? Where did you get an A in heart and an A in lungs? Or, you know, I see that you got a D in liver. I don't want to come to you if you're a liver doctor. And, of course, Sabrasula told him, I get A's, straight A's all the way down. I'm a good doctor. Well, that's what my dad wanted to hear. You want to go to a good doctor, not buy a 5x9. So sometimes, in this case, self-promotion is good. But in some areas of vocation, there's a place for it. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about this prideful thing of putting himself. He's talking about a level of self-promotion that is seeking the highest amount of honor in a non-career related or conversational environment. So everybody follow me so far, so good? But dude, you don't understand, my whole company, my work environment is a chair game. You don't understand. And there is such a drought of praise there that if there is just a small morsel of praise that is thrown out there, everybody fights for it. We'll claim it even if it's not there. Because it's so small. How unfortunate to be in a business with a scarcity mentality that praise is handed out so limited and so lightly that it's like you have 12 employees and there's only 3 candy bars. Versus an abundance mentality where you have 12 candy bars and only 3 kids. I'd rather be in that any day. That's going to be a lesson we'll learn today. So this becomes a question as a Jesus follower. How do I deal in that arena? My question becomes this: are you contributing to the darkness that is already there? Are you chasing after small morsel of praise, afraid that no one notices, contributing to the darkness? In other words, what I told Buddy, we come to a place, I used to work at a place that, you know, I love to wear dark clothes. That way, if I peed my pants, I'd get a warm feeling, but nobody noticed. It was one of those things that you wanted that warm feeling, so you chased after it. And Jesus says this, he says, you are the light of the world. In other words, Jesus just assumed that you're going to be working in a dark, dark environment. So acknowledge, I work in a dark place. So the question is, am I going to be light in that dark place? Or am I going to contribute to the darkness that is already there? I have to make a decision. Please, please be known for the most generous person with your praise. You got a question? Write it down. Get with me in a little bit. Please be known as the most generous with your praise. Lisa, you're the most incredible person. You play so good. You were cooking today. That's what I mean. Going and praising people. Be generous with that praise. Don't be stingy with it. Please be a person who shares recognition and doesn't try to hoard after it. Maybe you'll be the only one at your workplace professing to be a Christian and really living it out. In other words, you're going to come out of the closet. Because we need to come out of closets as Christians. And trust me, it's hard. Most of us, 90% of the time, we're doing this thing. And to break it is probably going to be the hardest thing that we're ever going to do in our life. Jesus is at this dinner, okay? They've come in to eat. He is at Simon the Pharisee's house. I've given you this answer. But who does he have with him? His disciples. His disciples are there. They are seeing how this whole thing goes down. This is probably not the first time we've seen how this thing has gone down. Are they seeing? And all of the people, they're wanting to sit here and there, and they're watching all this thing. And out of all the people that are at this party, who do you think should get what's going on? The disciples. They should get it. They're traveling with Jesus. He's teaching this time after time after time. But do they? Just a few pages over. Luke 22, verse 24. You don't have to go there. You can just write that down. I got it up there today. But a few pages over, listen what happens. Also, a dispute arose among them of who was the greatest. We had the disciples at a dinner, another dinner. And they're beginning to fight with one another at this dinner. What a bunch of children. They're fighting at the dinner, and they're fighting at who's the greatest. And this is what they're doing, Josh. They're going, you're the greatest. No, you're the greatest. No, I'm the greatest. No, you're the greatest. No, I'm the greatest. No, we're the greatest. And they're fighting over this whole thing of who is the greatest. You know what? I think they're just trying to sit down at the dinner table. They're trying to find out who's the one who is going to sit next to Jesus at this dinner. Jesus is the host. So who's next? And you know what? I think they're just trying to sit down. They're having an argument, and I can just hear them. I think it went like this. Andrew goes, I'm the greatest. Jesus picked me first. I'm the first disciple. He picked me first. I'm the greatest. I've been here longer than any of you. And I can see Peter go, no, guys. I'm the only one who got out of the boat. I'm the only one who walked on water. Matter of fact, Jesus asked me who he was, and I told him it was the Christ. He was the Messiah. And I didn't get that from you guys. I got it from heaven. I should sit here. And I can hear James go, wait a minute. It wasn't much after that, Peter, that he said, get behind me, Satan. So I think you need to be way down here. And you have this squabble, this fight that's going on between them. And do you know what meal this is? Anyone know? It's the Last Supper. Jesus is going to be arrested within hours. He's going to be tortured and killed within 24 hours of this. And the disciples are playing the chair game at the Last Supper, at the time Jesus has the most important things he wants to say to them. Two verses later, it says this, but among you, it will be different. Those who are the greatest among you should be the lowest in rank, and the leader should be the servant. Ouch. Here they are playing the chair game at the Last Supper, arguing who should be the best. And Jesus says, listen, the leader should be the servant. Remember the setting order? The older would be set at the seat of honor, younger on down. The leader should serve is what Jesus says. He says, guys, I've been saying it for 3 years. I've been saying this for 3 years. We're to serve. John tells us this story. It's not in Luke. It's in John. Jesus takes a basin of water. He ties a towel around him. He begins to work the outside of the table. And he begins to wash each one of the disciples' feet. He comes to Peter. Peter says, no, you're not going to wash my feet. He says, lest I wash your feet, you have no part of me. He says, Jesus, wash my whole body because you're all I want. The job of washing feet was reserved for the lowest of the servants. If a household had 20 servants, it would be number 20, the lowest. Their job was to meet him with a basin of water to wash their feet. And they would wash the guests' feet. And the roads weren't dirty. I weren't clean. They were dirty. So they're walking down this road and it's full of dust. And with sandals on, their feet get dusty. But more often than not, the sewers ran down the streets. So they're walking in dust and in urine. And animals walk down the same street, and animals left deposits on the street that animals leave. So when Jesus is bowing down to wash their feet, the possibility of urine, the possibility of dung, the possibility of dirt, mud, was upon their feet. And Jesus washes their feet, and they weren't clean. He puts his robe back on and he tells him this. He says, what I just did, you were to do. Ouch. Ouch. Serve one another. Now that you know this, you'll be blessed to do them. Did I read that right? Or did I say this? It's important to know, he didn't say, you'll be blessed because you know this. He said this, you'll be blessed if you do it. Let me tell you this, you can say and take the scripture and quote it all day. I'm the head and I'm not the tail, I'm above and I'm not below. I'm blessed coming in and I'm blessed going out. And we can take those scriptures, and those are true. That I am ahead and not the tail. I am blessed. I am above. I have all things through God who strengthens me. Those are positional truths. But I'm not blessed just because I say them. I'm blessed because I now do them. Chair game is a hard game to break. With Jesus, they were there for 3 years with him. And they did not get it. And I think not living a life of self-promotion is going to be the hardest thing that we could ever do. It's tough. Especially when we're unaware that we're doing it. Stepped on any toes yet? Jesus is walking with his disciples. This is what he says in Mark. Mark chapter 10, verse 45, this is what he says. He says, "For even the Son of Man came not to serve, but to be to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many." This is what Jesus is saying for himself. "I did not come to serve, I did not come to be served, I came to serve and to lay my life down as a ransom for anyone who would allow me to." It's one of his purpose statements. It's one of the reasons why he came to this earth. "I'm here to serve, to give up my life." Christian, by definition, means to be Christ-like. So guess what? Here comes your mission statement. If you're a Jesus person, a follower of Christ, here's your mission statement: to serve and to give up your life for others. That's what God's called you to do. If you're going to be a follower of him, that's what he calls to do. Not Don's words, Jesus' words. The definition of disciple, you know what that is? To serve others. Oh, and we're to go and make disciples. People of the basin, people of the towel, people serving one another. Some of the things I've learned is this: sometimes when a person is humble and vulnerable, it invites vulnerability to the ones they come in contact with. What do I mean by that? Two images I want us to see here: a rock wall conversation and a bridge building conversation. See, one blocks and the other invites people in. So let's look at these conversations, wall versus bridge, and look at what we've talked about in the past. You're at a party. Again, someone comes up to you and they say, come here. I want you to meet John the doctor. And you go over there and you go, "Hi, Jonathan the doctor. I'm Bob the unemployed dock worker." Well, that's real inviting, isn't it? Conversation just went poof. But your preschool mom, same example. You're at that party and someone comes up to you and says, "What do you do?" And you say this: "See those kids over there? That's my job. I've given my life to them. When my husband and I got married and we decided to have kids, that's what we chose to do." Well, how's that working out for you? It's working out great. But there are days I just want to pull my hair out. There are days that I've hung with my kids so long, I'm with another group of women and I turn and say, "Oh, look at the doggy." But this is what I'm called. Now, answer me that. Is that a wall conversation or is that an invitation that invites people in? Because you're showing vulnerability in that conversation. What is it that is so appropriate about vulnerability and honesty that builds a bridge of conversation with other? Because when you open up honesty with other people and they understand your journey, they understand your story, they hear that, they go, "Oh, you mean I'm not the only one that is facing trouble in my life?" And before you know it, the walls come down, a bridge is built. You shared being vulnerable with them, and guess what? They become vulnerable with you. And that one brick wall that stood up between you and a garden of relationship now has a bridge that is built over it. And you can walk in a garden of a relationship with that person. So why is this important to us? Mickey, if you'd come up. Why is this important to us? The one Christian attribute that comes out of leaving the chair behind is this. It's called humility, opposed to shameful promotion. Ouch. Why is this so important for you and I this morning is this. It seems that we were always on this quest. We're always on this quest to find ourselves. And it's promoted. Go to the bookstore and go to the health self section and see how many are there. I'm okay. You're okay. On down the list. Because people are searching for answers in their life. And they're looking daily. Self-improvement. Self-help. That's why I got to go to a psychiatrist. That's why I got to go to a therapist. That's why I got to do this. That's why I got to do. I need help. And when Jesus said this, he said, to find yourself, I'm going to show you how to lose yourself. Really what he said was this. He said, to find yourself, you must lose yourself. Why? Because it's not about me. It's about him. I couldn't find myself if I had to. I'm living a life that I absolutely love, wasn't looking for Jesus, didn't think I had any problems, and he came and found me because he knew I was messed up and he knew I had problems. To be a Christian, by definition, is to be a follower of Christ. And he came to lay down his life and serve. And you and I are called to live out the very same lifestyle, to be people who serve. So here's the question for today as we come to a close. As we have talked about the chair game today, is there any area of relationship where you kind of go, ooh, I see myself right there. I don't want to know what that area is. Surprisingly, we probably already know because we don't see it in our own selves. But is there any area that you see where I play the chair game? Listen, just ask him to help you. If the disciples didn't get it in 3 years, what makes you think you're going to get it in a month or 2 months or 2 years or 3 years? This becomes our prayer. Jesus, I just need help. Help me stay connected to the vine. Because if I'm a broken branch and away from your vine, that fruit's never going to be produced. Jesus, help me. Help me stay connected to the vine. Amen.